I think if you're able to provide sort of justification, but that vision for somebody, they can get excited. You know, some of the neighbourhoods we've got, they're exceptional. And they are really exciting, not just to live in, but actually to visit as well.
This is the In-House Podcast with Murray Henderson and Jim Webster.
Hello and welcome to the In-House Podcast with me, Murray Henderson.
And Jim Webster. Today we're with James Blakey from Modi Living.
Hello, everybody.
James, we have worked together for a long time now, but I wonder if you could help our listeners just understand a little bit about Moda Living.
Murray, it's always been a journey working with you, absolutely, you and Jim. Moda is a build-to-rent specialist, so we are like a big institutional landlord, if you wish, but we're an investor operator rather than a developer. So our job is to manage large-scale residential buildings and we would manage them 24/7. So we've got operational, what we call neighbourhoods around the UK. And as you know, because you've been designing them, you and Jim, we've got one operational neighbourhood, which should be delivered in around about 2 or 3 months' time. And then we've got another one coming up on the Clyde as well.
We have obviously been involved now with Moda for, you know, as long as Moda has almost existed. I think our business is kind of twin-tracked and started at similar times. There's obviously been quite a significant amount of development in the business over that period. Could you maybe just tell us a little bit about the history of that and how it's evolved to the scale that it's at today?
So Moda's 10 years old, actually. So I was employee number two. So I've known it from its very infancy, as it were. And we started with the first scheme, which is a great plug for you and Jim, because you designed it, in Manchester, called Angel Gardens, which is 466 apartments, or awash with amenity. And now we're delivering operational neighbourhoods, like I say, across the UK. So the business has grown and it's become more sophisticated. It's a growing sector and the build-to-rent, and it provides this incredible flexibility and choice in terms of, you know, the residential accommodation that we provide.
James, when you said that you're employee number two, you came on board when we were having some difficult planning conversations with Manchester City Council, and it was refreshing. Your approach to planning is very different from anybody I think we'd worked with before. What do you believe is the key aspect of like what makes Moda special in terms of its approach to a project and how you create homes for people?
I think we try and do it with a smile, Jim, more than anything else. I suppose, in a way, going back to your question, it's the kind of the pre-submission. It's all that pre-application submission work that we do. So sitting and drinking tea with the MP in the morning and then drinking tea with Auntie Elsie in the afternoon. It doesn't really matter. All of those people you deal with in exactly the same way. So it's explaining that vision and trying to take those people on the journey, which I think you're both very good at as well. So, you know, it's part of that team. We try to explain what the benefits are for not just the new residents that are going to come as part of the overall neighbourhood, but those existing residents and how they're going to benefit as well. And I think if you're able to provide that sort of justification, but that vision for somebody, they can get excited because, you know, some of the neighbourhoods we've got and you've been involved with are exceptional and they are really exciting, not just to live in, but actually to visit as well. So I think it's all part of that chat, as it were.
I think it's overestimated just how challenging creating a strong, vibrant residential community actually is. In architectural terms, I think it's genuinely one of the hardest sectors to get right. We all live in homes and we all know what we need from our house, but it's a really difficult thing to bring as many people in one place together. Moda are obviously very focused on the strength of community within the building itself. You refer to them as neighbourhoods. Could you maybe tell us a little bit about the things that you do, the strategies you employ to ensure that strength of community within each building?
Well, I think it's about creating friendships more than anything. So if you look at the statistics from North America, because the build-to-rent sector is not new, we've just inherited it. You know, if you've got 2 or 3 friends in a building, you're more likely staying long-term. So from a very selfish point of view, we want people to create those friendships to stay long term. And you're going to do that if you're spending time together in the gym or in the cinema room or in the private dining or in those beautiful communal areas, whether internal and external. And that creates the ability to have this incredible community and neighbourhood. What happens then is that when people move in, they create their own because they're all individuals. They've all got individual voices and individual stories. Some have got dogs, some have got cats, and they just bond together. And the other thing that Moda does very successfully is we have the app. So each neighbourhood would have an app. You know, if Jim was into baking and you were into gin tasting, which is probably about right, then you could set up your own groups within the neighbourhood. And that neighbourhood then takes on a character of its own. So the neighbourhood in Liverpool is distinctly different from the neighbourhood in Hove. So I think each one takes on its own special characteristics and own certain personalities. And you meet some incredible people along the way. Which we could do a whole podcast about that as well.
I can imagine, yeah. I also understand with so many people now living kind of transient lifestyles that Moda themselves across developments, if I lived in Glasgow but I was moving to another location in the UK, that you also assist those individuals in trying to move to one of your other developments.
Not you, nobody would want to leave Glasgow, would they? If well, they might come the other way, perhaps.
The weather could improve a little bit, I suppose, but otherwise.
But we do. So if you've got a lease, let's say you've signed up for 12 months and you want, you know, I don't know, you've got a new job or new partner or whatever it is, and you want to move to Glasgow, we'll assist you. You don't have to stay fixed in that neighbourhood. It's just about being part of that mode of family. So that flexibility and choice is something that we're very keen to, because naturally voids within our buildings, and they're big buildings, but that's the thing that we try to avoid at all costs.
James, when Moda and House started in this journey, I think there was four of us and four of you guys initially. There was Tony, Johnny, Dan and Oscar, who were full of great vision and also loads of energy. How have you managed to maintain that energy? Because one thing I've noticed is, like, meeting more and more of your colleagues, is that everybody who's involved in all of the projects with different functions, with letting or managing or operating the different developments and from the development side as well, how do you maintain that energy? Because all of you are so committed.
It's sort of a series of principles. So health and well-being, that family ethos. I mean, spending time with Dan, Oscar, Tony or Johnny, it's easy, isn't it? I mean, the fact is that they're just naturally enthusiastic about everything. You spend time with Tony and you come away as though you feel pumped up and ready for the, you know, 2-hour session in the gym. You do. So, and Nathan was also part of that happy crew when we kind of kicked off. So I think the thing about it is we've added to the team some incredible individuals. So we've not kind of rushed to employ quantum. It's very much quality. So those teams and added sort of in-house interiors and construction, project management. So it's a very end-to-end process. And again, going back to one of Murray's questions before, I think that's really important, that we understand the business from the front end to the back end operationally. And what Moda, because we weren't operating naturally, we didn't have a neighbourhood to operate initially. And then we got Angel Gardens and we got Lexington and Liverpool. And you learn through those experiences. And then we pass those learning experiences onto the architectural team and the designers, demographics, and all those sorts of things. And then you can be a lot more sophisticated in the way you deliver these neighbourhoods.
What was fantastic for me to see through what was probably quite a dark time in the UK and across the globe during COVID was actually how Angel Gardens was used by its residents of their own volitions. They didn't need anything orchestrated as such. They just seemed to use the building the way it was probably initially and intentionally designed without necessarily ever getting to see it come together as yeah. quickly. You know, people out in balconies doing their exercises with one another as a resident was down in the courtyard orchestrating a fitness class. How has that building evolved over years and how has that community strengthened?
I think that's one of the most endearing images. If you go through that very difficult period, is everybody on the balcony with that fitness trainer in the middle and everybody on those internal courtyard balconies. It's an extraordinary view. So I think Angel Gardens particularly, that's when people started to really appreciate the inside space and the outdoor side space. And you've been very good at designing inside out effectively. So that ability to live. And again, flippantly within Moda, we say, well, you don't actually rent an apartment with Moda, you rent the entirety of the building. And that's absolutely true. So all of those things that you get alongside no deposits, no service charges, it's that ease of living, you get all of those benefits. So I think from an Angel Gardens point of view, we look at it now and it's really stood the test of time, I'm sure you'd agree.
Absolutely.
Because when we went back in for planning, we'd had a little bit more height, didn't we? That was about 2016. So she's been open quite some time. And the feedback we get and the actual occupancy levels tell their own story. It's really extraordinary. And I think one of the other things, anecdotally, and we've got two layers of car parking there, which we'd never do now. But in that car park, you've got Bentleys and Porsches and Lamborghinis. But then you've got beaten up old Fiestas. And, you know, these cars that actually are covered in dust and they don't go anywhere. So there's myriad of different people that live within the neighbourhoods. And again, I think that's really interesting. You never quite know who you're going to bump into in the lift. But again, you know, you've got musicians in there. Apparently TikTok is a profession. You know, you get all these stats for different people. It's remarkable, actually, who you get.
We're obviously pretty excited as House, seeing Glasgow's first Moda development coming forward, Holland Park, which, as you said earlier on, is due to open its doors very soon. And that's hopefully going to be followed up by Lancefield Quay. Both of those buildings have very different planning challenges, but high-density residential communities, which we believe will make a massive difference to the nature of housing opportunity for people in Glasgow. Holland Park in itself, it's tried to strike that fine balance between creating that inside-out for residents themselves or activity rooftops or internal amenity spaces, but also giving back something to the city. It's obviously a full city block, and that central courtyard is going to be a key part of that, letting people in from just as they walk the streets around the building. You are very committed to those external spaces as a client. I think we did a rough percentage, like 50% of the, if you were looking at a roof plan, 50% of that roof plan is actually green space. Can you tell us a little bit about your attitude towards that as a client?
Well, again, I think it's not just looking at those residents going to live in your neighbourhood, it's about the externals. And actually, when we looked at Holland Park, which was the old divisional HQ, it was in quite a sleepy part of the city, wasn't it? I mean, there are just enormous roads around it. Nobody really went there, even though it had got the Dakota and the Novotel and the Ibis and the Malmaison. You didn't really go there for any other reason. So there was this ability to create a new... I mean, in Holland Park, we're probably going to have, about 900, let's call it 1,000 new residents living in the city centre. And the policy now really is to shift to get people more living in the city centre. So it's going to create that activity. But you can't do that in isolation. You really want to take those people with you. So we've got social value partnerships with people like the Glasgow School of Arts, and they were with us yesterday. We were showing some senior officers and senior councillors around yesterday, and the comments came back with said, this is extraordinary. This is utterly extraordinary. It will re-benchmark what private rented sector built-to-rent looks like in the city of Glasgow. And that's an extraordinary statement. I won't tell you who said that, but it was an extraordinary statement to make. But it's a great one for us. But I think it's that attention to detail in relation to the spaces and the ability for members of the public to come into the courtyard, dwell time in an incredible space will be exceptional. But then there's the terraces, the activation of that. There's the triple height in terms of the reception. They're very cathedral looking. Like, it's going to be one of those things which is going to stick in your mind, in your memory. And then for those lucky people who are going to live there, are going to think, well, this is just bliss. And naturally, I would say this, but we really want them to live and stay there long term. And then add to the fabric of that neighbourhood, and it will be taken on its own personality. So I think there's those sorts of things. Elsewhere, in Hove, that's a good example. We set up the community liaison group. So we're assisting the council spending our Section 106 monies. They've allowed us to spend our public art money direct. So that means we could speed those things up. We've now appointed 5 artists. We've part-funded a new installation on Hove Seafront called The Flight of the Langoustine, and we've sponsored the Brighton Festival for the last 2 years. So there's all sorts of things that you can do in partnership, genuine public-private partnership. The biggest risk is the local authority is not resourced enough. And I have to say, on Holland Park, because you know, both of you, we ran through in 8 weeks, delegated. Isn't that extraordinary? On a city block of that scale, but we did it properly, lots of pre-app discussions. The officers were on side. Sarah Shaw and her team and David McEwen did an amazing job, and we didn't have any objections. That was part of the dialogue, wasn't it? And that's what really you can get excited about, because it's possible and you can deliver it with exceptional design.
Well, hopefully Lansfield Quay follows through in a similar fashion. That's bringing forward 709 apartments, which is another significant introduction to the city. One of my most enjoyable experiences from Holland Park, I have to say, was nothing to do with communities or indeed the residential. But actually, I think we were doing a short piece for the Herald, perhaps, and we were in for some photographs. And as we wandered through the buildings, we were shocked to experience a police drill that was taking place. And I can safely say it, we'll probably need to bleep the next words I would use, but I got a little bit of a fright, and I wasn't as manly that day as 12 guys coming in armoured gear were pointing guns at us, as we thought it was a camera that was there, but it was actually guns.
It was guns and those blast shields, wasn't it? And they had the full kind of Darth Vader makeup on it. It was extraordinary.
I don't know if it's been said, but it's nothing to do with the client or the design team. It was the former police headquarters building, that's why the police were there.
But it was like, what a shock. I mean, that building itself was two different buildings that had come together.
Yeah.
So it was a bit of a war on the inside. We were finding our way around, trying to find the right spot for a picture. And next thing you know, there's 12 guys in with big guns and helmets on.
I think we had our funders with us that day as well.
Yeah.
I gave them something to think about.
Yeah.
Welcome to Glasgow.
Over the years, Build to Rent in the last 5 years in particular has really risen as a key residential model. What kind of level of scepticism have you faced, particularly the front end, as you've engaged with local authorities and the almost I don't believe you kind of attitude? How difficult has that been to navigate?
Yeah, it has. So the educational piece, you know, when we kicked off 10 years ago was a big task. And I think, I suppose, the comment back was, it can't be. Sounds too good to be true. But no deposits, no service charges. On-site teams 24/7. You get the gym for nothing. You get your furniture pack for nothing. Really? No charge for pets? All this sort of good stuff. And actually, it took a little while for people to just kind of bed into the idea that actually people wanted to rent. And we're seeing in the demographics that we see a lot more people choosing to rent as a first option. But then as you come out of university, for example, that demographic, you've now lived in purpose-built student accommodation. You don't necessarily want to go into something which isn't of the same sort of quality or better. I think build-to-rent serves that step in terms of graduation and post-grad and then coming in. So a lot of people will assume that build-to-rent is 24 to 34-year-old. That's right. But we're seeing a huge growth in families. We fully expect Holland Park and Lansfield Quay to have a, you know, big component of family in there. We've got lots of three beds that we can deploy. One of the big key challenges, I think, for that is a social infrastructure in city centres. You know, you need to be thinking about schools and doctors and dentists. That's really what holds back families coming in. So there was scepticism. We don't see that as much now. I think build-to-rent is seen as something that creates that flexibility and choice. I don't think government have got it yet, though, central government. You know, the current government are very much focused on private ownership as the tenure that they're continuing to push. And even when you look at some of the Labour Party comments, you know, looking at sort of 60 to 70% owner occupation, well, there's still 30-odd percent looking to rent. You know, it's a big part of the electorate. But what you don't want is rogues, landlords with mouldy walls and exposed wiring. It's institutional grade, 24/7, people on site. So, you know, for example, if Jim's playing his AC/DC way too loud, which is possible.
I'm a Duran Duran man.
Oh, a Duran Duran man, you see. He's got his new Romantics hat on. So if he's playing his Duran Duran really loud and he's playing his Rio at top decibel, then it's just a case of a knock on the door from the concierge team saying, Jim, can you turn it down a little bit? It's not kind of ringing up a remote landlord. You've got that security, that you're cocooned in nature, that you know that the building is highly amenitized but highly managed as well.
I think it's also, as a society, people will become far more comfortable with renting. And I know for me, it's like Laurie and I, we own our own house, and you can see a point where you think, this is a bit too big for us. I'd love to live in Holland Park, where you've got access to everything, good bike shop down the road, good gym, and you don't have to worry about anything.
I have a wife and two children at home, and I would love a one-bedroom apartment myself in Holland Park. Quite frankly, I think you're right. I think how we all choose to live our lives moving forward will change. I think that demographic just now is suited to younger people because they're maybe finding it more difficult to purchase is one reason, but also the way they want to have an experience-focused life. As I get older, I would still like to have an experience-focused life. I don't really want to stop that level of experience. So having everything on hand, the level of amenity provision and the quality within that, I can certainly say Angel Gardens is the first and the last building that we've designed a rooftop sports pitch on, which was quite an exciting proposition at the time. And Jim and I first took that back to the studio and were discussing it with the team. They all looked at us like, sorry, what? But it was an ambition, and it's used really, really well.
Yeah, well, it is. And I think, again, when you look at, because that's that one, and then you want to do something a bit better and then a bit better. Yeah. And like for the Mercy in Birmingham, we've got a 200-metre running track right in the middle of the city centre. Can you imagine that? It's extraordinary. I mean, that's really well used. And the thing about the gyms are they are proper kitted-out gyms. It's not like a room in a hotel where you just think, oh, there's a bit of space left over. These are proper kit with proper fitness trainers and things like that. And those experiences are really then created by the people that live there. You're providing those spaces for those people to fill, and then how they use those spaces and it's curated by the on-site teams is, as I said earlier, it takes its own personality and its own life. It's quite extraordinary.
One thing that struck me is that we've talked about very much about the active spaces within the developments that give people kind of different amenity, but there's also great places just for kind of to relax. There's the gardens, there's the libraries, there's the private dining spaces, there's the things that complement both the active and also just the kind of relaxation and more contemplative type space, which really kind of blends well. And it really struck me, like, seeing Angel Gardens first kitted out in terms of seeing the library. It's a lovely space on the 7th floor overlooking the city, which you really see. You see in people's houses, but you really see in a bigger development.
I think that's right. And again, it's reflected in the demographic. So we're seeing a real increase in plus 55s in the demographic that we see. I mean, in Angel Gardens, three generations of the same family living in there. Isn't that extraordinary? Yeah. But, you know, that growth in plus 55s, we were seeing people selling their suburban houses and then moving in. The change there is they're now kind of renting their suburban houses and moving in because they're concerned that they don't want to get off the housing ladder because of the lack of supply coming through, which is an entirely understandable situation. But nevertheless, they're coming in for that experiential type moment, you know, whether it's 2 years, 3 years or whatever it might be. But and they might disappear for 2 or 3 months or the rest of it, which I know Murray does, even though he's meant to be working, Jim. But nevertheless, you know, when he's not there, he's on his cruise and things like that. But you've got that ability to live in a place which is secure and you don't need to worry about cutting the grass and all that sort of stuff. So
it's just as well I'm seasick. I don't particularly like cruises. So James, it's obviously it's been a fantastic first 10 years for Moda Living. We've shared a similar birthday as house. What is next for Moda? What's in the pipeline? What's the ambition?
There's a number of answers to that. Prop tech is a huge part. So as you know, neighbourhoods are censored. So we're collecting lots of information anonymously, but that helps with our net zero carbon strategies. That's a big, big, huge push for us. Again, we're very much now, internally at least, and my marketing people will listen to this. Now, I don't say lifestyle consumer brand, I'll get into trouble. So we are now a lifestyle consumer brand. I've said it twice. And we've got the different platforms. So again, it comes back to that flexibility of choice. So you've got your core, which is things like Angel Gardens, but then you've got your Select, which is more suburban. You've got your what we call studio living, which is co-living. Then you've got single family, and now we've got student. So here in Glasgow, single family is Vista Park. Very proud of that. That's 156 blended houses and apartments, going extraordinarily well. And then we've got things like student accommodation, which is starting to come up. But it's got that general theme about high amenity levels, highly managed, but with exceptional design. You cannot get away from the bedrock that it needs to have exceptional design to make it work in terms of the spaces inside and then the way it looks externally. So I think we're going to be continuing to push that and then pushing the outputs from the demographics and changing those spaces. So again, in the Lexington, we've got one big cinema room, which is phenomenal, 17th floor overlooking the River Mersey. We're now moving towards smaller, maybe putting two cinema rooms in rather than one big one, because the demographics are showing that it needs to be a bit more flexible. So it's things like that, and I think those kind of experiences will come on. But I think the other key thing for us is neighbourhood. So where Angel Gardens is a single building with a horseshoe, we're now moving into much bigger master plans. So things like Edgbaston is 11 acres. It'll have ultimately around about 6 or 8 buildings on it, with a central park with over an acre. Hove is 8 buildings, that's over 9 acres. So we'll put £6 million in the public realm, and then each of the buildings will benefit. I think we'll move to drone deliveries, which I think is really exciting. And we're looking at putting in things like post offices now for, you know, those big multi-master planned areas. So I think prop tech and technology is just, it just leads to something that's going to be even more exciting.
And its influence over community generally and how we all live and day-to-day habits and behaviours is going to be quite an interesting, perhaps daunting experience shift for a lot of people and managing the various age groups that deal with, you know, or interface with technology in a different way. I know certainly from my experience with my mum and dad, probably won't listen to this podcast so I can talk about them, but their introduction to technology and their day-to-day use of it as they're in their retiring years will be quite an interesting series of transitions. And I think we have a responsibility, certainly as designers and yourselves as developers, to ensure that's as smooth as it can be, because, as you've said, the demographics are changing and how people want to live and experience where they live.
You know, we're talking to people, like, from the health and fitness point of view. You know, let's say Jim's working out on his cross trainer going crazy. Well, the fact is that generates an electricity power. You can actually put that back into the grid. So all of a sudden you're thinking, well, actually, how does that work? So all of a sudden you can actually monitorize Jim's exercising in the gym, and then maybe Jim decides that actually, having monitorized it, it could go to charity. So then you could think about, well, actually, where does that go? That means that those gyms actually, if you've created a club in that particular gym in that particular neighborhood, you could compete against other neighborhoods in relation to monitorizing it, and then maybe naming your own charity. And then all of a sudden you're thinking about the carbon savings from that. And it, all of that sort of stuff is untapped. And that's really exciting.
That is exciting. The unfortunate thing I have in my head at the moment is I have Jim on a cross trainer listening to Duran Duran eating cakes.
In Lycra. Green lycra.
I am stunned. Silence. My colleagues think that.
No, it's just from today's conversation, there's been a couple of snippets.
Well, what I was going to do, I was going to say thank you to Moda. We did a charity cycle and Moda were our headline sponsor. And I'd just like to say thank you for that. We've managed to help the Marie Trust and we ended up raising over £15,000 through that endeavour.
Remarkable.
Fantastic, yeah, excellent. I think it's also a time for me to say thank you to you, James, for not only joining us today, but also for the time we've spent on the projects that we have worked with Moda. It's been probably 8-9 years we've been in some form of dialogue across a number of projects, and we've had some interesting challenges over those projects and those endeavours. We look forward to working with you over the coming years, seeing Lancefield Quay hopefully get planning and Holland Park open its doors.
Well, it's been an absolute joy. You know, and I think, you know, looking at both of you, we've become friends during that period and we've had interesting times. We've had some fun nights out. And I think I go back to that word smile. If those people are listening to this, we like to do it with a smile. I think you get the best out of your team when you do that. Treat people with respect. Go for those pre-app chats. And try and take people on a journey with you, because actually the product is extraordinary for those people that live in the buildings, but also those communities that will benefit from them as well. So it's been an absolute joy. And then, you know, next 10 years, Moda in house.
James from Moda Living, thank you for joining us. This has been the In-House Podcast. You can listen to all of our episodes on house-collective.com.